I want to share a short skit with you today that I think is kind of related to the topic.
These routines they've been telling me about.
You know, it used to break me up, those inspirational poems you used to...
Really? Do you remember the one that went, they said it couldn't be done?
No. It was called Perseverance. I remember that because it was a very, very moving poem.
Would you do it, Perseverance? Would you recite it just for...
Well, come on.
Oh, please, please, do one. Can we get...
All right, could you hold that for me?
Oh, thank
you. Perseverance. Somebody said it couldn't be done. But he with the chuck... I always get very emotional over this one. But he with a chuckle replied, maybe it wouldn't, but I will be one who'll never say no till I've tried. So he buckled right in with a trace of a grin on his face. If he worried, he hid it. And he tackled that thing that couldn't be done, and he couldn't do it.
Well, I thought that was kind of amusing and kind of related to topic today. And also, I've been refraining from telling funny stories at the beginning of my talks. Well, first of all, because my main critic always tells me that they aren't funny. But also, it's just really difficult because I don't get the feedback of hearing you laugh. But I do have one that's on point today. And it's about these four ministers, three of which were men and one was a woman. And they were in a disagreement over an issue, and the three men all sided with each other against the woman. And she became so frustrated that she entered a prayer and she said, God, please, Lord, send a sign. And at that moment, there was an incredible flash of lightning in the sky. And she turned to her three male counterparts and she said, well, now what do you think? And the response was, what's the big deal? It's lightning. It happens all of the time. So again, the woman minister, she prayed, Lord, I need a stronger, bigger sign. And this time the flash of lightning came down and struck a tree that was just 10 yards away from where they were standing. But still the men were firm. They said, we still haven't seen anything that's not natural. And so once again, the woman cried, Lord, please help me. And with that, a loud booming voice appeared from the high in the sky that said, she's right. And so the woman looked at her three fellow ministers and looked them in the eye. And this time they said, all right. But it's still three against two. I'm seeing some head shaking. Thank you. I love it. Today we're talking about will, one of the 12 powers. And after our service, our children's church will be taking up the same topic. You know, each of the 12 powers is unique unto itself. And trying to decide which of the powers is the best or the most important can be really a fun exercise, kind of a fun game to play, kind of like trying to argue over which of Superman's powers is the coolest. However, it's important to remember that each of the 12 powers is related to the other powers in some way, and that the powers work in harmony with each other and in conjunction with each other. And this is especially the case with the power of will. I admit that the power of will is absolutely one of my personal favorites. The apostle designated to represent will is Matthew. And while I never place too much stock on where in the body the powers are located, the power of will appropriately sits right at the front of the mind. What will is not is stubbornness or pig-headedness, as we saw in the opening joke that I told. Will is the executive power of the mind. It's the decision-making, the direction-choosing faculty of the mind. And the reason that I like it so much is because it moves all of the other powers to action. In the absence of our wills, nothing happens. It drives absolutely everything that we do. And here's a fun thing to stir things up a bit. The will and the ego are really very, very close friends. Well, you may argue, well, everything I'm saying can't be. What about those people who just surrender their will to others? And yes, this happens all of the time. But those who do so use their will to make a decision, to get in line and join somebody else's parade. As for will and ego partnering with each other, this is kind of a fun part of the talk today, and I want to get back to it a little bit later because it requires some further exploration. There are literally tens of thousands of examples of the power of will being exercised. Just consider any Olympic event. Gold medal winners are acclaimed for their hard work and their dedication. But all of that hard work and dedication, and faith too, by the way, all of these things are driven by a strong will. If you have ever participated in a really grueling regimen, you know that you have to dig deep sometimes to hang in there because you just want to quit. Particularly during those times in life when things just seem to be beating us up one after another. You know, there's just this danger, this temptation of our wills just becoming broken. But let me ask you, who is your favorite hero? I mean, think about it for just a second. And whether it's somebody famous, like an actor, a sports figure, a political figure, or perhaps somebody who lives or has lived under the same roof with you. Think about it. What is it exactly that you love about that person? What is it that you admire? Is it his integrity? Is it her compassion? Is it his leadership? Is it that she always hangs in there and gets things done? His generosity, her listening presence, all of these wonderful things, which may seem to come naturally, are driven by the power of will. Because all of these strengths or gifts inevitably meet with resistance in the world. And to persevere and continue to be that person takes the strength of will. One of my all-time favorite historical figures is Winston Churchill. His picture should be right up there next to the word will in the dictionary. During World War II, in the face of incredible opposition and resistance and adversity, he refused to stand down. He stood firm, hanging tough, even against members of his own parliament, many members of which strongly favored cooperating, entering into talks with Hitler in a virtual surrender. And so this man stood virtually alone. Had it not been for his strong will, we conceivably all could be speaking German today. Michael Jordan is heralded by many as the greatest basketball player of all time, and he truly was remarkable. He was a gifted athlete without a doubt, but I think his greatness was due to his enormous strength of will. The man just refused to lose, and even during practices, he would go all out, dominating the situation. And it's interesting here to make note of that, even during practice, because will, like all of our powers, is a kind of spiritual muscle, and we need to develop that muscle by practicing it sometimes. I remember back when the Blackhawks were winning all of those Stanley Cups. And after a playoff game, the coach from the St. Louis Blues was asked what strategy he would use against the Hawks. And he answered that as a coach, he was trying to find a way to break the Blackhawks' resolve. He understood that the Blackhawks were about something that far outweighed their talents and their athletic gifts. To exercise your power of will is to commit to something. It's a decision on your part to be all in. It's a difference maker because by making such a decision or a commitment, you automatically begin choosing the direction to take in order for what you want to become manifest, whether it's in yourself or in the world. And your purpose, your vision, all of your talents, all of your other powers fall into line and become activated in that same direction. Traditional marriage vows generally are responded to with the words, "I do." Interestingly, though, in some cases, in some ceremonies, the response is in the future tense, "I will." Either way, that vow that you exchange with someone else is the power of will, setting the wheels in motion. When you marry, you mobilize your very being to full participation in that relationship. Or at least ideally that's the case. And guess what? When one of the other of the two really are not all in, when they are not committed with their full will, or sometimes when that will gets broken after a time, the wheels of the relationship come off. All human conflict, whether a global war, a sporting event, an argument between two people, all of these things are battles of wills. And sure, strength and talent have much to do with who comes out on top, who is going to be the winner. But it is the stronger will that usually prevails. I recall the story of David defeating the giant Goliath. And in the world of politics, you will often hear the phrase, "the will of the people." It's all according to the will of the people. And this is truer than most people realize. Our country today is so polarized. We are engaged in a battle of wills, and it will continue until folks shift their wills into some sort of spirit of compromise. It will change when our leaders need to understand that they need to direct their wills, their perseverance, not to have a winner and a loser, but for everybody to be involved in a win-win situation. How successful will the Black Lives Matter movement end up being? The answer does not lie in how many people are engaged in the movement. The answer lies in how strong is the will that is driving this movement. Women's suffrage eventually happened in this country because of the strong will of the likes of Susan B. Anton and Elizabeth Stanton, who refused to be deterred even during the distraction of World War I. I believe that in politics, we get what we ask for or what we are willing to tolerate. And sometimes, unfortunately, there's really no distinction between those two things. Every Sunday, we pray the Lord's Prayer. We pray the line, "Thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven." But what is it that we really are affirming? When Jesus was about to die, about to be killed, he prayed, "Let this cup pass from my lips, but may not my will, but your will be done." The meaning of the word seem obvious enough, but how are they related to our power of will? Our topic today is, in fact, the question, is it God's will or our will? And when you hear this title, you probably assumed that the talk was going to emphasize putting our wills aside and doing God's will. And I'm not trying to minimize this because it has a real rightful place in prayerful practice. But as far as I'm concerned, this language kind of hints, kind of promotes a type of separation between ourselves and God. And maybe to shake things up a bit and raise a few eyebrows, I want to suggest that the question that today's topic asks really doesn't even make sense. And the reason that it doesn't make sense is that our will always is God's will. Our will always is God's will. Now, before you start going crazy and start posting for a new minister, let me explain. Years ago, I was a congregant at Unity Northwest. A really disturbing topic came up in a group discussion. In fact, it was so disturbing that somebody suggested that we move on and stop talking about it. And one of the people, somebody who was a very looked-to leader in that congregation of that church, said, yes, we don't need to have those thoughts running through our heads. Sometimes we have absolutely no idea how incredibly powerful we are. Our way-shower Jesus spoke these words to his apostles. I give you the keys of the kingdom of heaven. Whatever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven, and whatever you loose on earth will be loosed in heaven. And for centuries, the church took this to mean that they, the hierarchy of the church, were given the authority to make all of the decisions on behalf of God. And particularly, the meaning was applied that the clergy and the clergy alone were given the power to forgive sins. But these words are spoken, given to all of us. These words tell us that all of us are in the creation business. These words tell us that any perceived separation between heaven and earth is illusory. If we want to enjoy the fruits of heaven, it's all about us directing our wills to achieve that higher, greater consciousness. But these words tell us that whatever it is that we will for ourselves, good, bad, or indifferent, we are going to experience. Given the theology that most of us have been embedded with, this can be a very difficult thing to wrap our heads around. We can make sense out of it if we limit what we bind or loose to the good stuff, right? I mean, the good stuff is aligned with God, but not all that bad stuff. You know, the things coming from our fears, the things coming from our insecurities, the things coming from our habits, from the things coming from our ego. But no, it applies to everything. The so-called bad stuff as well as the good stuff. Think about it. First of all, distinguishing the good stuff from the bad stuff isn't always easy. We exercise our power of will with every single decision that we make. We set our powers in motion to align with our thoughts and our decisions. And while we almost never think about it, we constantly are tapping into divine substance to make it happen. Everything that exists in the world today, every physical reality, always has existed in divine mind. an invention like the gun, which is used to kill other people, existed in divine mind long before the first one was ever assembled and invented. And regardless of what it is that we put into motion, the kingdom of heaven is at our service. How often have we sung the song, "Our Thoughts, Our Prayers"? Think for a moment about the lyrics of that song, because they're really profound. Our thoughts are prayers, and we are always praying. Our thoughts are prayers. Listen to what you're saying. Keep a higher consciousness, a state of peacefulness. Isn't this what the law of attraction is all about? We set our sights on something and then put our power of will into motion to make it happen. Isn't this a notion that's consistent with the wisdom of the old saying, "As you sow, so shall you reap"? Or from the book of Proverbs, "As a man thinketh, so he is." Obviously, some people in the world use the power of will to put some very bad things into motion. We hold the key to love and fear. Our creative ability can be taken in either direction. We can direct ourselves, motivate ourselves using our power of will to truly make our existence a heaven on earth, to truly eliminate any distinction between those two. We can use our power of will to establish that we are talking about the same reality. Or sometimes, and we all go there sometimes, we can opt instead to enter into a consciousness in which we get a taste of what hell is all about. We make good decisions and sometimes not so good decisions. Usually the results coincide with those decisions. And when we transgress, it isn't against some external God sitting up in the clouds who's going to bombard us with lightning bolts. But rather, we transgress against the Christ within. That's why the pain of choosing the wrong decisions can be so intense sometimes, because it's always personal. If we buy into this notion that Christ's light burns within us, if we tie into this notion that deep down inside, at our core, it is the Christ, the universal Christ, that is shared by all of us, then what we decide, how we decide, is going to be felt by us in a very personal way, depending on much we do or do not align ourselves with that reality. Early on, I said that the power of will and ego are really very good friends. You know, and I always thought that the ego gets kind of a bad rap in unity. It becomes the dumping ground for everything that's not good. It takes the blame for everything. And actually, what the ego is, it's a reflection of whatever willful decisions we may make. And yes, if we ignore our divine spiritual self, we will show up egocentric and do all we can to convince the world how absolutely terrific we are. Look at the political arena today if you want an example of what I'm talking about. But if we embrace our divine heritage and understand that all power comes from God, our ego will affirm, it will manifest that the world and heaven are one and the same. If what I'm suggesting to you this morning is true, well, it puts a tremendous onus on each and every one of us. Our lives take on a whole new blessed responsibility It also transforms our lives from the mundane to the very, very sacred. And yes, it's pretty scary, and yet so potentially wonderfully awesome. Like it or not, you are a difference maker. And as you put your will into motion, think big and think love. As you put your will into motion, think big and think compassion, our daily word for today. And as you put your will into motion, think understanding. You only have to will it, and so it will be. Every once in a while, you will hear somebody issue a disclaimer, "I'm not in charge." And what this implies is a really positive thing, that it's God who is in charge, which of course is true. But we, each and every one of us, we are commissioned to take charge. We need to listen to the words of our way shower, Jesus. What is bound on earth, really and truly, is bound in heaven. And so now let's take this into prayer and meditation.